WBEZ Chicago, this is Testing the Candidates, a special program from our education desk. I'm Kate Grossman, WBEZ Senior Education Editor. The election for Chicago's mayor is on Tuesday, and we're getting listeners ready by interviewing the mayoral candidates on the future of Chicago public schools. Over the course of the next hour, you'll hear from the two women hoping to claim the fifth floor office at City Hall, former prosecutor Lori Lightfoot and Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle. So here's how this is going to work. We'll start with Lori Lightfoot. We're interviewing her at her campaign office. And later in the hour, we'll hear from Tony Preckwinkle. Ms. Lightfoot, thank you for meeting with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Joining me to interview the candidates is WBEZ education reporter Sarah Karp. She covers Chicago Public Schools for us. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
I'll start off with the first question. Ms. Lightfoot, you and your opponent have similar views on Chicago public schools. You both want to invest in neighborhood schools and move to an elected school board. Neither of you wants to close any more schools. If schools are what matter most to a voter, why should they choose you over Tony Preckwinkle?
Well, because I believe that we have to really think of schools in a much larger context than just the building that conducts learning during, you know, 8 to 3. Schools should be a community asset. And as you well know, given the closure of the 50 schools, the 4 high schools in Inglewood, and the attempted closure of the National Teachers Academy, a lot of harm has been done in communities that has not healed. I think the first thing, and I say this loudly and publicly enough so that Janice Jackson is listening, is there's got to be a reconciliation process and a healing process with parents and teachers and other stakeholders in the education system who are still, I think, badly wounded and damaged and skeptical and a lot of other emotions because of the way that education policy has been played out in the last 7 years, and particularly around the very difficult issue of school closures. So that's where I would start. And then we've got to think about schools as, for me, kind of the economic spine of a neighborhood. If we invest in our neighborhood schools, particularly our elementary schools, and if we think expansively about education, what education looks like holistically and not just in the four walls of the school, but what are we doing to enhance after-school learning activities? I know from the work that my wife has done that kids learn all in all kinds of different ways in all kinds of different scenarios, and we need to make sure that we're creating a robust and vibrant environment to capture and support that learning.
And you made this point about, I hope Janice Jackson is listening. What is it, where do you think she's fallen down in this regard?
I wouldn't say fallen down, but I think we've got to respond to the anger and frustration of parents and teachers who feel like they've been shut out of critical decisions about how their children are going to be educated, what schools are going to be open, what resources are going to be put in those schools. You know, I know a lot about the policing space, and there's a lot of energy and anger and emotion around that. It pales in comparison to the number of people and stakeholders who are really focused on public education in this city, and we have to understand the entirety of that ecosystem. And one part is damaged or harmed, it has a ripple effect across the entire ecosystem. So I think it's really important for her as the leader of Chicago Public Schools to understand that, and I'm sure she does, but to acknowledge it in ways that I think will be start a healing process for those people who feel like they've been shut out.
So both you and Tony Preckwinkle support moving from an appointed school board to an elected one, and it is strong support in the Illinois legislature. So let's talk about how that would actually look. How soon would you want to go to an elected school board?
Well, for me, it's not a question of timing. It's more a question of the details of what that would look like. My mother was on an elected school board in the town that I grew up in. It was a small town. She won an at-large election, which was fairly unusual, particularly given the racial and population dynamics of my town. But I know from that experience how valuable it can be to have true parent representation in the discussions about discipline, about hiring and firing, about how resources are used and the kind of programs that are available in a school. So the ideal that I have in my mind's eye is something that replicates that kind of experience. So we have to think about what's the right number, how will board members be elected, what kind of criteria and experience should they have. how we're going to fund elections, because what I don't want to do is have elections for a school board be as expensive as elections for other office. And I want to make sure that parents truly have a seat at the table. I don't want to change one broken system for another that is a system that if you're clouded and you've got access to resources, then you have a seat at the table. I think that would be taking us in exactly the wrong direction. So those details really matter. I'm aware of the fact that the bill from Representative Martwick, my BFF, has been moved through at least one chamber of the General Assembly. But I don't think that there are these kind of issues that really have to be thought out are part of that bill, are part of the discussion. And I'll also just say, having a school board of 21 people is completely unwieldy. That will be a recipe for disaster and chaos. It's way too large.
So do you think this would take at least your first term to hammer out?
No, I think we could get this done faster than that. But as I said, I won't be satisfied with any kind of legislation unless it addresses these really critical fundamental structural issues. It's nice to say you're for an elected school board, but as with many things in life, the devil's in the details. And these are some of the details I have not seen people talking about, and I think it's critically important that that happens before we move forward with any legislation.
So, you know, one of the dangers I think that people think about is that maybe you get a school board that is representative of people who have money because they're able to well fund the candidates. Yes. How do you prevent something like that, that the Ken Griffiths of the world don't come in and, you know, run a slate? And
well, one of the things that was a part of this discussion in the election leading up to February 26 is the possibility of requiring that anyone who presents himself as a candidate have spent some time as a local school council member. I thought that was a very interesting proposal for the obvious reasons. Those are mostly parents. They have experience in hiring and firing, making and meeting a budget, and they're invested in their kids' education. Now, that's something I think is a worthy proposal that we should give a lot of consideration to.
One other question. One of the things that several of the candidates who did not make it to the runoff said is that they were worried that if we moved to an entirely elected sure. school board, that the mayor would then become unaccountable to the school system, and that they wanted to keep some accountability. Do you think that if we move to an elected school board, then you'll not be accountable to about the education system?
Well, I would state it in a slightly different way, which is what I heard from the other candidates that favored either no elected school board or a hybrid. The concern is that the mayor has to have skin in the game, because if the education system fails, I don't care if you have an elected school board, people are going to blame the mayor. That's, I think, part of the impetus that led to the changes back in the 90s to give then-Mayor Daley control of the entire school system. Look, there's got to be balance. Obviously, as mayor, I'm going to be fundamentally interested in making sure that we have an education system that is going to be the ladder up for kids all over the city like it was for me. I grew up in a low-income, working-class family, and but for educational opportunities and attainment, I wouldn't be sitting here and talking to you today. So I know how valuable that is. I also don't want our education system to be like a pirate booty that divided up the spoils to the winners. So that worries me greatly. But I think that we can strike the right balance with an elected school board so that the interests of parents are protected, the interests of students, of course, are protected, and other stakeholders like teachers and building principals. And, of course, the mayor has to have a role in that. And, you know, what I've said is this. Look, I don't fancy myself as a politician, particularly as a first-time candidate, but you have to deal with other elected officials, other elected bodies, first and foremost, the Chicago City Council. So if we can't manage a relationship with another elected body, then shame on me.
So to move on to another subject, Chicago has 26 neighborhood high schools that are severely under-enrolled.
Yes.
They struggle to offer even the basic yep. classes. And Janice Jackson has said that she thinks it's inhumane to keep schools like this open. But you've said you oppose closing any schools. Is there ever a circumstance where you'd want to shut down one of these schools?
Well, that's not entirely what I've said. What I've said is that closure should be the absolute last resort. after a process of engagement with people who are stakeholders around that particular school. We need to make sure, look, nobody benefits from a school that is severely under-enrolled. We're not going to have enough programming. The offerings for the students are going to be diminished as compared to other fully populated schools. But we have to be much more transparent about the demographics and the trends and engage the parents and teachers and other stakeholders around that school and what the future looks like and come up with a process by which we think creatively about how to further enrich that school. Now, if at the end of the day, the population continues to dwindle, then that's a problem that we're going to have to reckon with. But I also think we have to say, in the context of thinking about population in local schools, this is not a problem that CPS can solve on its own. People are leaving the city for a lot of forces that have little to do, in many instances, with CPS. First among them, in my view, is the violence that's raging out of control in way too many neighborhoods. The absence of economic development where people feel like they've got a real stake in the future of the city. So if we have to address those things as part of the ecosystem, and I think that's something we have to start as quickly as possible to make sure that we are building real change in those communities, both on the violence front and also on economic development. But fundamentally, we're, as I said before, we have to start with a conversation with those people in those communities that where the schools are underpopulated and talk with them like they're adults, like they care, because they do, about what's happening with their children's education.
So when you talk about a moratorium on school closings, do you have an idea of how long that moratorium would be?
I don't. Without getting into the specifics, which I'm not privy to on the outside, I think that that'll be a top priority for me, is really to understand what we're talking about in terms of numbers and trends. CPS obviously has that information at its fingertips, but that'll be part of the early conversations that I have with the CPS leadership.
You're listening to Testing the Candidates on WBEZ, a one-hour special where we're talking to the two women vying to become Chicago's next mayor about their visions for the future of Chicago public schools. I'm Kate Grossman, WBEZ Senior Education Editor. Here with me testing the candidates is WBEZ education reporter Sarah Karp. Right now, we're speaking with Lori Lightfoot. Later in the hour, we'll hear from Tony Preckwinkel. So Chicago Public Schools is in better shape financially now that the state has a new school funding formula. But CPS is still deeply in debt. Mm-hmm. You talk about hiring more social workers, more counselors, more nurses, which is a shortage that WBEZ reported on earlier this month. You also talk about keeping severely under-enrolled schools open and trying to invest in them. How will you pay for all of this?
Well, we are in better shape, but we're not as good as we could be. For me, from the financial standpoint, because in the short term we're going to have to continue borrowing money, the focus has to be on improving our credit rating. Because when we go into the market and we borrow with our terrible credit rating as it is, it costs us much more money, and if that debt's not restructured over time, we're going to be paying back some exponential amount over and above what the base amount was that we borrowed. So thinking about making sure that we got a very good, solid financial plan and good financial team within CPS is going to be critically important. One of the things that I think we have to do is make sure that we continue to press to get our fair share of funding from Springfield. And I think those allocations have been better, it's stabilized, but it's not where it needs to be. So that's going to be a priority for me as part of a Springfield agenda. I think we also have to look at TIF reforms, because obviously in areas where we have surpluses or where we need to unwind TIFs, like I think we have to think seriously about that regarding the TIF that covers most of the Central Business District. Those are monies that could actually be going towards helping fund CPS. The other thing that I think we also have to do is look at the fact that there are private dollars that are out there that I think can help us address some of the challenges that we have at CPS, whether it's from the business community, whether it's using Opportunity Zone money to help schools, or whether it's philanthropy or a combination of those three things. I think we've got to expand our horizons in thinking about ways in which we can direct private dollars into the public school system as well.
Let me ask, when you look through your education plan, it sounds fantastic. You know, mm-hmm. It has all the things that you would want in a school. But as we've just been talking about, that costs money. How soon could someone who reads your plan think this might actually happen?
Well, I think some things we can take care of right away. Some things are in intermediate and some things are long term. What has to happen right away is a change in the mentality that we use to approach public education. And I alluded to that earlier about we have to treat parents, teachers, and other stakeholders as welcome partners. That is really a different mindset that I think will make a lot of these tough decisions easier. We also need to make sure that we're viewing education policy, including the very sensitive questions about where we allocate resources through an equity and inclusion lens, and that's something that we haven't done in CPS. I think those will help create space, if you will, for us to take on some of these other tougher challenges. The other thing that I think we have to do is we're not going to have an elected school board tomorrow, but we have to fundamentally change the way in which the school board does its business. We have to get rid of people who have conflicts. I don't think there's any confidence in the leadership of the school board as it's currently constituted, so I'll look to make substantial changes there. And we have to think about repopulating the school board in the interim period before there's a fully elected school board in a way that does justice to the people who desire a real voice in how the school population is run. I'm going to put parents on that school board. People who have students within CPS should be on the school board. I interestingly had a conversation just yesterday with my 90-year-old mother, who is still railing against the machine, if you will, about what's happening with things in our little town, and saying she believes part of the problem is that the school board members don't have kids in the system, and that's a problem. And I agree with that. You've got to have people who have skin in the game, and there's nobody has more skin in the game than CPS parents.
That's a good segue to the next question. Does your daughter go to a CPS school?
She does not. She goes to a private parochial school.
And why did you guys make that decision?
Well, both my wife and I are public school kids. She grew up in Western Illinois. I grew up in Ohio. We always thought that our daughter would go to public school. When she was a three-year-old and we went to sign her up for a public school preschool, we were told essentially there's no room at the inn, that the waiting list for families of means was so long that the likelihood we'd be able to get her in was slim to none, so we had to look for some alternatives. We ended up going to the school that she's in now, and I think the reality is once you're in a school that's a welcoming environment, that's very diverse, she's got small class sizes, two teachers from PK through, I think, second grade, reading specialists, and all the other amenities that you want for a good school, it's hard to think about, and she's, of course, got lots of friends, and we have a school community. We're very involved in our daughter's school, and we've got a group of friends that we met from day one of preschool. It's hard to think about changing out of that environment. We thought about it, about testing, having her test in for kindergarten, but she's happy and she's thriving, so we're not going to change. But I want to make sure that parents like me who really are committed to public education have a space and an opportunity to connect up with a good neighborhood school.
What about the point you just made about the school board member having parents on them, having skin in the game? If you don't have skin in the game in your own family, how does that impact your ability to make policy for the school system?
Well, look, I care about public schools. I'm a public school kid. I know what the power of education is and the transformative and transcending effect that can have on public school kids' lives. And I want to do everything I can because of that commitment, because of me coming out of that experience.
You're listening to Testing the Candidates on WBEZ 91.5. This is a one-hour special where we're talking to the two candidates for Chicago mayor about an issue that affects everyone, the future of our public school system. Whether you're a student, a parent, or a taxpayer, we're all affected by the quality of our schools. I'm Kate Grossman, WBEZ's Senior Education Editor. Here with me interviewing the candidates is WBEZ Education Reporter Sarah Karp. Right now, we're speaking with Lori Lightfoot. So if you are elected mayor, one of your first jobs will be to negotiate a new teacher's contract mm-hmm. and prevent a teacher strike. The union has endorsed Tony Preckwinkle and is out with an aggressive opening bid, including a 5% raise and class sizes capped at 24, which is much lower than current sizes. How will you prevent another teacher strike?
Well, I think we have to engage the CTU as early as possible in the process. I've jokingly said, but only kind of jokingly, I'm not going to lead with my middle finger in dealing with them. The CTU is an important institution in our city, not just in city government. Hats off to Karen Lewis and her leadership team for really remaking that union in a way that is important to the conversation around education. I will bring to the negotiation process primary interest and concern about how do we make sure that we improve on the progress that's been made, but making sure that our the education, the classroom, is the best, most nurturing, and safe environment possible. And obviously, teachers have to be a part of that equation, as well as looking to provide other supports for our kids, whether it's nurses, whether it's school counselors, whether it's librarians, which I care a lot about. I still have a very fond memory of my elementary school librarian. So those are things that I think are critically important to making sure that the education experience for our kids is as fulsome as possible, so we set them up for success. So that's the mindset that I'm going to take into those negotiations. It doesn't matter to me that they supported a different candidate. This isn't about them, and it's not about me. It's about our kids.
But this is also, you, as you said before, we talked about before, the school system has got a lot of debt. It's certainly not flush with cash, so there'll be limits on what you can offer the teachers.
Most certainly, and they recognize that. They're very smart and sophisticated people, and they're doing what you do, which you put out your wish list, and then you winnow from there, and they know that this is going to be a negotiation process. When I moved to Chicago 32 years ago, you could set your clock by the teacher strike every year. It seemed like it was literally every year. That does a lot of harm, mostly to our kids, but also to our parents. So we need to work hard and do everything we can to make sure that we're living true to the promise to our parents and our kids that they're going to start school on time, we're going to be in a healthy environment. Of course, I believe in collective bargaining. I'm a kid who grew up in a union family. My dad was a member of a steelworkers union. And we need to be fair to our teachers. They are critically important to the ecosystem of our education system here in the city. And let me just pick up on one point from a previous question. Schools are really important also to healthy neighborhoods and economic development. And we've got to think about it in that larger context and not in isolation. There's lots of things that the schools are dealing with that are happening outside of the school building that they can't control. And we talked before about population loss and how the ripple effect that has on underpopulated schools. But schools also have to be part of the solution to building strong, healthy neighborhoods as well.
You know, moving on to a question that's sort of connected to what you were just talking about. Last week, WBEZ reported that an increasing number of the diplomas being given to Chicago Public School students are coming from alternative schools for dropouts. This is especially true for Black students. And some of these schools are part of an expansion of alternative schools, mm-hmm. in which they're mostly half-day online programs. And some would say that they offer an inferior education. They take less credits to graduate from them as compared to a traditional Chicago public school. What would you do about these schools? And also, do you find any problems with the fact that so many of the diplomas that we're touting as part of our graduation rate are coming from these alternative schools?
Well, I think the fact that so many of our children are in alternative schools by whatever route they got there, in and of itself is a red flag that we have to think about and why dig into why it is that that's happening. A lot of these alternative schools are run by private vendors. I'm concerned about that and what the economic incentive is to feed kids to those kinds of schools. So those are questions that I think we have to dig into with the CPS leadership. Look, you know, I was skeptical of the graduation rates, and I looked at and had education experts really dig into the numbers. The numbers are real. But what we know is when we go beyond the percentage and we look at, well, who is thriving, who is making progress, we know that we still have significant progress to make, particularly when it comes to Black and brown children and particularly young Black boys. So I'm very focused on that and digging into those numbers. It's more important to me that we have a robust education system that meets the needs of our children that learn in different ways, and that we have a rigor around the educational offerings that we're giving to them. We have to be preparing our kids to move into the 21st century economy. Some of those kids will matriculate on to colleges, but not all of them, and many won't. And so that's why, if I'm elected mayor, what you're going to see in CPS this fall is an expansion of vocational opportunities. But we have to look at the dropout rate, the truancy rate, and make sure that our kids are getting a good quality education in whatever environment it is that they're in.
That's Chicago mayoral candidate Lori Lightfoot talking about her views on education as part of our special Testing the Candidates. Ms. Lightfoot, thank you for being here.
That's my pleasure. I enjoyed the conversation.
Coming up, we'll talk with her challenger in Tuesday's election, Tony Preckwinkle. For more election news, stay with WBEZ and log on to WBEZ.org. You're listening to Testing the Candidates on WBEZ 91.5, Chicago's NPR news station. From WBEZ Chicago, this is Testing the Candidates, a special program from the WBEZ Education Desk. I'm Kate Grossman, WBEZ Senior Education Editor. We're talking with the two candidates for Chicago Mayor about the future of Chicago public schools and where they stand on everything from an elected school board to how to improve neighborhood schools. We spent the last half hour with Lori Lightfoot. Now we turn to Tony Preckwinkle, who is currently president of the Cook County Board. President Preckwinkle is here with us in the studio. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for inviting me.
Joining me to interview President Preckwinkle is WBEZ education reporter Sarah Karp.
Hello.
President Preckwinkle, I'll start off with the first question. You and your opponent have pretty similar views on what to do with Chicago public schools. You both want an elected school board. You both want to invest in neighborhood schools. You both want to avoid closing any more schools. So if education is a voter's top issue, why should they choose you over Lori Lightfoot?
Well, you know, I'm a teacher by profession and a big believer in our public schools. And I've talked about the fact that you could pretty much predict school performance presently by zip code. That is, the most privileged part of the city has the highest performing schools. And many schools in our more disadvantaged neighborhoods are challenged. They're under-resourced. So we really need to focus laser-like on our neighborhood public schools. And, you know, I know from working with parents and principals and community residents how important community schools are to neighborhood strength. And we've really got to invest in those community schools. And, you know, as I've talked to teachers, one of the things that they have made clear is they want to be sure that their schools are well-resourced. And that means not just good teachers, although I'm a teacher, I know how important that is, but in many of our schools we need bilingual support, we need social workers. We really need to be sure that our neighborhood public schools are well-resourced and that our kids can do well. And that often means that we need to put more resources into communities of need than in other parts of the district. And presently, our funding formula is basically a per capita formula. And we need to be sure that we're addressing the needs of each of the communities that are served by our public schools. And our public schools take every child, every student. And that's not true for magnets, selective enrollments, or charter schools. And that's why our neighborhood public schools are so critical.
The things you say are similar to what Lori Lightfoot says. So what distinguishes you in terms of if education is really a top issue for a voter?
Well, you know, I've actually had to work with parents and community residents and school personnel to improve our schools. You know, I remember when I first became alderman, community residents expressed concern about King High School, which was a perennial state basketball champ, but had the lowest test scores in the state. And working with community residents and CPS leadership, that school was transformed into a high-performing magnet school. You know, we've got to invest in our neighborhood schools, and we need to work with community residents and school personnel to do that. And that's the experience that I've had as a local elected official. It's hard work to make changes in any institution, but particularly to make changes in our schools.
You talk a lot about neighborhood schools and the need to invest in neighborhood schools. Do you see any problem with the fact that now we are a school system of choice and, you know, 75% of high school students don't go to their neighborhood schools? So, you know, would you change any of that sort of system that we've built that's, you know, all about choice?
I mean, one of the challenges we have is in many of our neighborhoods, the neighborhood public school is not well-resourced. And so those students who have the wherewithal or the interest migrate to schools elsewhere, get on the bus and go elsewhere. Whereas if they had, in their view, better choices closer to home, they'd probably take those choices. But the programming that's offered, may not be may not fit their needs and aspirations. So we've got to be sure that we have good neighborhood schools, particularly good neighborhood high schools, that have the kind of programming that would be attractive to the young people who live in the community. We need more neighborhood schools that have programs in trade to help people get into the trades. We need programs that support young people in STEM, and particularly in the computer sciences. We need high schools that help kids who are interested in manufacturing, particularly advanced manufacturing. So we need to be sure that our neighborhood schools have the kind of programming that kind of programs that will attract people. Because presently we have sort of a two-tier system. We have magnets and selective enrollments, and then we have neighborhood schools. And it's the magnets and selective enrollments that are attractive to many students just because of the breadth of programming and the opportunities, academic opportunities they have there. And the neighborhood public schools often are disadvantaged in that same way.
Let's move on to talking about the elected school board. I know both you and Lori Lightfoot support an elected school board, and the General Assembly has showed broad support for it. I'm wondering, how soon would you want to see an elected school board in place? There's one bill that calls for it to be in place as early as 2020, another bill that's in the General Assembly that calls for it to be in place by 2023. How soon?
I think this is something on which we'd have to work with the state legislature. I understand that Representative Martwick has a proposal that he has been trying to move forward for some time. I think that proposal is the 2023 plan. But in any case, we need to work with the state legislature to ensure that there's an elected school board and that we have a proper transition to make it work.
But would you want it during your first term? Would you want to see it happen during your first term?
I think we'd need to work with the state legislature and see what measures they think are possible. I want to be sure that there is an appropriate transition and that this goes smoothly. And I'm not sure we could manage it in 1 year.
Some of the mayoral candidates who didn't make the runoff said they didn't want an elected school board. They said they wanted the mayor to remain accountable. How can that accountability be maintained with an elected school board?
Well, I think it's important to understand that this is the only school district in the state that doesn't have an elected school board. So in every other city, town, and village, there's an elected school board and a mayor or a village manager or whatever. And I don't see any reason why Chicago should be different. My concern would be having a smooth transition to an elected school board.
But would you be held accountable? Would you still see yourself as accountable for the quality of the school system, or would you just hand that all over to an elected school board?
I think it should be in the hands of an elected school board, but I think the mayor should work closely with that elected school board.
You're listening to Testing the Candidates on WBEZ, a one-hour special where we're talking to the two candidates for Chicago mayor about their visions for the future of Chicago public schools. I'm Kate Grossman, WBEZ education editor. Here with me testing the candidates is WBEZ education reporter Sarah Karp. Right now, we're speaking with Tony Preckwinkle. We spoke with Ms. Lightfoot earlier in the hour. So I have one more question about the elected school board. Both you and Ms. Lightfoot oppose charter schools. But what if there's a slate of candidates on the elected who get elected to the school board, and they are big proponents of charter schools? For example, right now we're seeing the aldermanic race. We're seeing the Illinois Network of Charter Schools pumping a lot of money into the aldermanic races. So what if that same thing happens on an elected school board, and they have enough votes to open a bunch of new charter schools? Would you be okay with that?
Well, in a democracy, you have to abide by the decisions of those who are elected officials. And the danger in a democracy always is that a small minority may be activated and have a disproportionate impact on the outcome. But that's a challenge of democracy more broadly than just an elected school board.
What about the risk of having a fractured board that can't get anything done because no group has a majority?
That's always a challenge in an elected body. I don't think that's an argument against democracy.
Well, but that's the argument, one of the arguments why we have mayoral control, and what the proponents say, that it's easier to advance, get things done and move policy forward if you don't have an elected board, if you don't have that element of democracy.
Well, it could be argued that the most efficient government is dictatorship. I'm not sure that that's what we want, is it?
Turning now to Chicago Public Schools has a severe under-enrollment problem. We have 26 high schools that have so few students that CEO Janet Jackson has said that she thinks it's inhumane to keep kids in those schools, that they don't have enough kids to support a robust education. I'm wondering, what would you do about these high schools? Do you just keep them open? Is there any circumstance under which you would close them?
Well, I think you have to look at it on a case-by-case basis. What's the reason for the decline in enrollment? You know, the school system has allowed, for example, charter schools to open across the street from neighborhood high schools. Now, the idea of charter schools was that they were supposed to be educational models and that the public schools would learn best practices from the charter schools. But that's not what happened in Chicago. What happened in Chicago is the charter school movement became a competitor to our neighborhood public schools. And as a result, many of our neighborhood public schools are challenged in enrollment. So I think you have to look at it case by case to see what's driving the lack of enrollment and see whether there are possibilities of enhancing enrollment through additional programming. Or, you know, changing school boundaries. There are a variety of options that you might pursue. But I think, as I said, closing schools are neighborhood anchors in addition to being educational institutions, and we should be very, very cautious about closing them.
Now, some of these schools, though, they're just in neighborhoods that don't have much of a population anymore. And so, you know, you might be able to enhance the school all that you want, but there's sort of a supply and demand issue here where we have way more supply than we have actual, you know, bodies. And so, I mean, that seems like beyond just saying, okay, we're going to invest in that school.
Well, as I said, you know, I'm in favor of a moratorium on school closings and a moratorium on charter schools. That means that doesn't mean we would never close schools. I'm in favor of a moratorium now because, as I said, you know, the school district prior to 5 years ago when it closed 50 schools in 1 year was closing 10 to 12 schools a year and, you know, able to manage that. But what they did in that 1 year closing 50 schools, they clearly weren't able to manage very well. And, you know, I think your reporters have said that 38 of those 50 schools are still vacant. And furthermore, you know, the University of Chicago studied the young people who went to the closed schools and found that what the school closures did was magnify achievement gaps between African-American and majority students. So, I mean, this is not a good outcome.
So the school system is in better shape now that the state has a new school funding formula, but CPS is still deeply, deeply indebted. So you talk about keeping severely under-enrolled schools open. You talk about hiring more social workers, counselors, nurses, which is an issue that we at WBEZ wrote about. Last month, the shortage of nurses. So how do you pay for all this?
Well, part of it is reallocation of resources. You have to look at where you're spending money and focus on providing money for the most critical programming. But, you know, I think it's important to understand that part of our challenge is driven by pension costs. And we in the city of Chicago pay for the pensions of our own teachers. We also pay for the pensions of the teachers in the rest of the state. But the residents of the rest of the state don't pay for our teachers' pensions. So one of the things we have to do is have one retirement system for teachers that includes our Chicago public school teachers if we're really going to meet the pension challenge over time. Now, that has to be a priority of the mayor of the city of Chicago working with the state legislature because it's blatantly unfair. I mean, okay, we're going to help pay for the pensions of teachers elsewhere, but nobody else pays for our teachers?
Well,
I mean,
they, under the school reform, there is more money from the state coming to CPS pensions than there was in the past.
I know, but there needs to be one system. It does not make sense for Chicago public school teachers to be excluded from the state system.
Would that be a priority for you if you were elected
mayor? It would
be
something that I would work on as mayor, yes.
You're listening to Testing the Candidates on WBEZ 91.5. We're testing the two candidates for Chicago mayor about an issue that affects everyone. What lies ahead for our public school system? I'm Kate Grossman, WBEZ Senior Education Editor. And here with me interviewing the mayoral candidates is WBEZ Education Reporter Sarah Karp. Right now we're speaking with Tony Preckwinkle. Sarah, you've got the next question.
Yeah, so I was just wondering if you sent your own children to Chicago Public Schools and what drove your personal decision?
Well, my former husband was a teacher at one of the neighborhood private schools, and my children went there for elementary school, and then they went to the neighborhood high school, the public high school. And my grandchildren have gone to public high school from the very beginning of elementary school.
Why was that important to you?
Well, you know, I believe in our neighborhood public schools, and we live in a neighborhood where we've got great neighborhood public schools. So it was an easy decision for me personally and for my son and my daughter-in-law to send their kids to neighborhood public schools.
So one of your first jobs, if you're elected mayor, will be to try to shepherd through a new teacher's contract. You are endorsed by the Chicago Teachers Union, who you'll be negotiating with. What do you say to people who worry you won't be tough on the teachers union and could potentially shortchange taxpayers?
You know, when I was elected president of the county board, our first budget had a $487 million shortfall. And we cut expenses and we refinanced some of our debt and we laid off 1,500 people. And I did that because that was what was required in order to balance the budget, despite the fact that I'd gotten considerable union support to be elected to the office. You know, you have to make the tough decisions that are in the interests of the taxpayers and meet your fiscal responsibilities. You've got to be a good fiscal steward, regardless of where your political support came from.
Are there any issues where you disagree with the Chicago Teachers Union?
You know, I'm not going to negotiate contracts on the radio.
No, I mean policy issues. Are there any issues where you disagree so that people could appreciate where you might step aside from the union?
No, you know, I'm not going to go there. I think I'm a teacher by profession. I believe in the good work that teachers do, and I know how hard the job is. So I'm sympathetic to teachers, and it has nothing to do with support from the CTU. But as mayor of the city, it's your responsibility to negotiate fair contracts with your workers and to be sure that the taxpayers' interests are protected, and that's what I would do.
Last week, Mayor Emanuel announced several new initiatives, expanding preschool and adding academic programs to several schools. It's going to cost the city about $60 million, he said. That's going to sort of hamstring next year's budget. And not only that, but he gave principals got their budgets this week with those increases embedded in those school budgets. And I'm wondering if you're concerned at all that he's sort of handicapping your ability to set priorities in the first year as mayor.
Well, this isn't the only way in which he has moved to embed things in next year's budget. You know, it's been reported the contracts for people heading sister agencies and all kinds of challenges in that way. I think whoever is elected mayor will come into office and have to deal with those challenges. But on your way out, kind of hamstringing your successor doesn't seem to me to be an appropriate response. I'll just say that. And you know, I want to talk, too, about early childhood education. I'm a big believer in early childhood education, but I think we have to be careful. You know, in many of our neighborhoods, there are community-based organizations, many of them that come out of, frankly, the Settlement House movement that provide child care to people in the neighborhood. And frankly, they use the money, that the subsidies they get for four-year-olds to subsidize their programs for two- and three-year-olds. So when you take four-year-olds out of those community-based programs, you hamstring their ability to deliver services to families who have younger children who need child care. So this is a complicated issue, and just saying we're going to put four-year-old programs in all of our schools doesn't reflect the complexity of the early childhood environment.
How would you overall, when you assess what Emanuel did with the Chicago Public Schools, what is your assessment of how he's leaving the school system?
I think the school system has been tremendously challenged by the revolving door in leadership. It's very hard to have a stable institution and move it forward when there have been so many changes at the top in a relatively short period of time.
He talks a lot about how achievement has improved and he feels very proud of what he's done with the school system. Do you think that he should feel that way?
Well, I understand that there have been real improvements in achievement, but as I said, the challenge of the multitude of leadership changes has hampered our ability to move forward perhaps at the pace we might otherwise have.
You're listening to Testing the Candidates on WBEZ 91.5. We're testing the two candidates for Chicago mayor about the Chicago Public Schools. Right now, we're speaking with Tony Preckwinkle. I'm Kate Grossman, WBEZ senior editor. With me interviewing the candidates is Sarah Karp, who covers Chicago Public Schools on our education team. Can you think back on your own education for a minute and compare it to what goes on in CPS? Can you think of one thing from your own schooling experience that worked well and one thing that you think undercut learning for you and your classmates?
Well, I grew up in St. Paul, Minnesota, and I went to both elementary and junior high. We have junior highs in St. Paul. And high school, neighborhood public schools. And, you know, the challenges in that community were the same that we face now. That is that the communities which were most privileged had the highest performing public schools. So this is not just a challenge here in the city of Chicago. It's a challenge across the country and over time. I'm grateful for the fact that I went to public schools because I think that public schools give you a broad exposure to folks who may not necessarily be exactly like you. But I think that our public schools, wherever we are in the country, need to be appropriately invested in. And unfortunately, the challenge everywhere is that the wealthiest school districts spend the most on their kids, and school districts that are more challenged economically don't have those same resources. So in a way, the way in which we fund public schools through property taxes magnifies inequality, and that's a challenge across the country.
WBEZ reported last week that an increasing number of diplomas are coming from alternative schools. A lot of people say these alternative schools offer an inferior education. They're mostly online and mostly half day. And a lot of these diplomas are going to Black students. I'm wondering, what would you do about these schools?
Well, I was a high school teacher in a traditional high school, so that's kind of my grounding. Just, you know, online classes don't provide you with the same interaction with your teacher and your fellow students as being in a classroom does. And I'm not, how can I say this? I'm not denigrating online programs. I'm just saying there's a richer experience when you're in the classroom. And I think that we've got to be sure that our neighborhood public high schools are well serving young people, so we're not pushing them into alternative schools. Now, you know, I worked closely over time with the Alternative Schools Network, ASN, and I know that there are good alternative high schools out there, so I'm not disparaging them. I'm just saying our focus really should be on strengthening our neighborhood high schools because of the breadth of programming that's there and, as I said, the richness of the classroom experience. I think that it's important that we provide people with a good education and not simply the diploma. You know what I'm saying? I mean, is the goal really to try to see that they can read well, that they can do math well, that they have an exposure to a broad curriculum, or is it just to get them a diploma and get them out the door? And then how much is that diploma really worth to them? You know what I mean?
I'm going to ask one last question. Chicago Public Schools, like many school districts, has a teacher shortage. Would you consider lifting the residency requirement to help deal with the teacher shortage in Chicago?
I think we just have to make our recruitment efforts more robust and particularly recruit African-American and Latinx teachers. We really need to provide opportunities for African-American and Latinx teachers. And, you know, I think it's really important that students see over the course of their educational experience teachers that look like them. That you know, you can't be what you can't see. And it's important for young people to understand that there are opportunities for them in education, and it's important to provide opportunities in our Chicago public schools to African-American and Latinx young people to get their start as educators. And so I think we need to put a lot of emphasis on recruitment of teachers of color, frankly, African-American and Latinx teachers, to fill these gaps.
And so you're not interested in lifting the residency requirement?
No, I think it's important that our teachers, as our other city workers, live in our city. But I think we need to invest a lot in our recruitment efforts.
That's Toni Preckwinkle, who's running to be Chicago's next mayor, talking about what she'd do with Chicago Public Schools if she wins on April 2nd. President Preckwinkle, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
You've been listening to Testing the Candidates from WBEZ's Education Desk. This program is part of WBEZ's continuing coverage of the campaigns, candidates, and communities ahead of the runoff election on April 2nd. This special was produced by Colin Ashmead-Bobbitt, Israel Smith, Sarah Karp, and myself, Kate Grossman. For more election coverage, go to WBEZ.org. This is WBEZ 91.5, Chicago's NPR news station.